Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about how if you are a busy parent of an angry or anxious child or teenager, are you uncertain if and when you should be worried by an extreme emotional outbreak? Are you so busy that sometimes you dismiss these thoughts but think about them later? My guest this evening is Dr. Lori Holman, a psychoanalyst with specialized clinical training in infant, parent, child, adolescent, and adult psychotherapy. She is the author of two wonderful books called The Busy Parent's Guides, series of books applying the parental intelligent way of successfully diffusing emotional outbursts. She has put together two books. One, The Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Anxiety in Children and Teens, and The Parental Intelligence Way and The Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Anger in Children and Teens. Both are based on parental intelligence, and she has done a remarkable job making me sad that I didn't have these books to guide me when I was raising my own four children. This is a powerful tool for parents to help their children cope with the emotionally challenging adolescence. Short and to the point, the book gives the parents steps on how to help their children master their failings using the parental intelligent way. It is really a pleasure to welcome Dr. Lori Holman to help us take charge of our lives on WDIY.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon. I don't know what time it is for you.
We're in the same East Coast area. It's a morning. It's morning. Tell me, what made you write these two wonderful books? One is The Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Anxiety in Children and Teens, and the other is Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Anger in Children's Teens.
Well, I found that when parents came to me with a child and they described their child as having a problem, they often would say, "My child is bad. He does or she does such and such." And I tried to reframe that word bad into distressed so that they could understand that if we weren't going to blame their children or themselves, and we were going to discuss ways to cope with anxiety and anger. And I coined the term parental intelligence as a way to give them five easily followed steps that they could use it in any occasion. So that it was a structured approach. And for busy parents, that's helpful because you can call immediately to mind the five steps and use them in any situation.
Can you give us an example of how these five steps come into play when, let's say, dealing with many parents are working today. You have couples who are working, and which is a wonderful thing, but children are either in daycare or in or have a sitter at home. And sometimes, yeah. And sometimes children find, you know, that they really want more attention. And one of the examples you give in the book of a little girl who wants to, after the day is over, when she goes to bed, she wants to go to bed and be in bed with her mom and dad.
Yes.
So tell us, how do you cope with that?
Well, that particular example was exactly what you said. They were two professional parents, and I think she was a 10-year-old, and she was still sleeping in her parents' beds because they really missed each other. But the problem was that this girl was not getting enough sleep. The parents were not having enough sleep. Their marital relationship was being affected, and it really wasn't a good plan for solving the problem. She had other problems, too. She was rather perfectionistic and obsessive. And so I taught the parents the parental intelligence way. And that helped a lot for them to slowly learn how to take this child and let her sleep in her own bed and learn that she could feel autonomous and more independent that way, that this was really helpful to her. I have another example of a 13-year-old named Lydia who came home from school one day, and she was evidently anxious. She was sitting at the kitchen table, drumming her fingers on her cheeks, staring at her homework with paper scattered all over, and she was clearly anxious about something, and she seemed angry also. And the first step is called stepping back, and that's what her mother did. Now, she pauses and takes some time to see if Lydia can gain control of herself on her own, and she thinks about all the times she sees Lydia anxious, so she doesn't rush into solutions. She remains calm and non-judgmental with her daughter. This gives parents, stepping back gives parents permission to not know what to do immediately, because how can you know what to do before you understand the reasons behind the anxiety, which is the basic meaning of unlocking parental intelligence, finding meaning in your child's behavior. So the second step is self-reflecting, where the parent knows she is busy preparing dinner, but she can be relieved by her husband in an hour to go to speak at a fundraiser that night. So she can't let her anxiety about that event affect her anxious daughter. Anxious mother, anxious daughter aren't a good match. Seeing Lydia trembling, though, and still distraught, she decides that the third step of parental intelligence is needed. And this is really the crux of parental intelligence, understanding your child's mind. You're asking, why is my child acting this way? She sits with Lydia, puts her arm around her, and asks her, what's the matter? Is something going wrong today? Now Lydia is going to help her mother and herself know the meaning behind her anxiety and, in this case, her anger, too. She's crying, and she says she didn't make the first cut on the lacrosse team. This means to her not being in the popular crowd. So her mother asks her to tell her more. The mother's job is to ask very open-ended questions, not to direct her. Lydia says it means next year she won't make the travel team, and that's a way to get a scholarship to college. It feels so unfair, she says. I'm a really good, loyal player on the team. I don't think it's fair that I wasn't picked. Now her mother sees that her daughter is anxious and angry because of social anxiety, being part of the popular kids, and long-term worries about college. She also knows her anger because she's feeling left out. This feels unfair to her. So she decides to focus on the most erroneous conclusion, which is that they only have so much time before the mother's going out. So Lydia's mother says, college, that's years away. You have a superb academic record and surely will by high school. Do you think we can take things one at a time? Next term you can try out again. So Lydia's mother has now gone to the next step of parental intelligence, understanding a child's development. She sees her daughter as a worrywart about the future, far beyond what a girl her age should be worried about. She's like 7 years ahead. When Lydia's given her mother's reasonable perspective, she stops crying, she hugs her mother, and she says, I don't feel dizzy anymore. My chest stopped pounding. I thought I'd never feel better. With that, her mother knew that Lydia was on her way to a full-blown panic attack, which was stopped when her mother understood her mindset and gave her a new perspective. So now step five, problem solving, was naturally underway. The two decided she'd try again next term, and she settled down to do her homework. Her mother postponed talking about her social anxiety to another calmer time when they would have more time to really discuss it. But her mother was greatly relieved, because if she had not used her parental intelligence when she began to leave for the fundraiser, Lydia's separation anxiety would have been triggered too. So in about 15 minutes, Lydia was calm, her mother felt relieved, and parental intelligence had averted a big, anxious, and angry crisis.
Well, I think that is a wonderful example, because what you're showing is that sometimes we as parents, we don't mean to be, but we are what is known as reactive. where rather than use these five steps, which really take a little bit of some reflection and some pausing, sometimes we see the child's behavior as a reflection of our own parenting and become judgmental. And what you're saying is, these are five steps to say, look, this has no, being a parent has not to do with judging ourselves. It's looking into the problem that we're facing.
Yes.
And you get
and oftentimes the problem, the ostensible problem, I didn't make the team, is not the underlying problem, which is what you want to get to, which for this little girl was social anxiety and fears about college years away. But that's because the competition is so tough these days. And so the mother found the underlying problem. It wasn't really just not making the team. She could try that again, but what it meant to her.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Elena Barbro. And this evening I'm talking with Lori Hoffman, a PhD, a psychoanalyst specializing in modern parenting, parent-child relationships, and an award-winning three-time author. And we're talking about two of her books. One is Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anxiety in Children and Teens, and the other is Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anger in Children and Teens. And we're also, in that past, that illustration that you just gave, you gave your five steps for managing and helping our children. And one was stepping back, two is self-reflection, understanding your child's mind, understanding your child's development, and problem solving with your child. You know, this is, you know, the books are so well written and really, really can be such an assistance to parenting in this busy age. And I want to thank you for that. Laura, how did this all work out with this young lady? Do you know whether she made college or not?
Yes. Years later, she did, actually. I saw her when she was 13, but she can't. Her parents called me. Her mother called one Thanksgiving, actually, and said, I just have to call and thank you for the years ago when you met with Lydia. She's going to a fine college, and she's very relaxed about it. So that was a great relief to me and to the mother, obviously.
And, you know, that is a wonderful example. I'm not sure if we have time, but maybe we can start it. You have an example in one of your books about a young girl who she was missing her mom because both were she was missing her mom particularly, and also her dad, but both parents were professionals. And they spent a lot of time at work, and she had caregivers that she liked, and she was in a daycare. However, she found that when mom and dad said goodnight to her, she felt very lonely, and she would seek her parents' attention by going into bed with them and saying, Mommy, can I come? Can I come and sleep with you? And she would crawl in beside them. This is something that happens frequently. It's not only in your book. It happens frequently. And, you know, we may not have enough time in this part, but is that a pretty current, common problem that you find with
the... Yes, it is. It's a little bit confusing to many parents because there is a theory called attachment parenting that does suggest what's called the family bed. The problem is that it's taken kind of a leap into justifying a child at even 12, 13 years old still sleeping in their parents' bed. So it's interfering with their autonomy and their independence and their sleep. They're exhausted children, actually, is what happens.
And they're exhausted parents, too, whose parents' sleep are interrupted. But we're going to talk more about this. We're going to talk more about this example when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobro, your host. And this evening we're talking with Dr. Lori Holman, who is a psychoanalyst specializing in modern parent-child relationships and an award-winning three-time author. She has written two wonderful books, Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anger in Children and Teens, Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anxiety in Children and Teens. And I must tell you, I've raised four children. I certainly wish I had her books rather than Dr. Spock, whom I try to follow very carefully. Let's talk about some other instances of children, busy parents who want to spend time with their children. Give us some more examples of you in your book.
Okay, sure. Well, you had mentioned a little girl who was sleeping in her parents' bed.
Right.
And she really had never learned, except as an infant, how to sleep in her own bed. And the problem was the parents really were very busy. They're both professionals, and they missed their child. And after school, she went to her grandmother's house. So she really missed her parents, too. And so at night, after their nighttime was really pretty short, she did her homework, she ate dinner, and then it was time to go to sleep. And she wanted to be with her parents more, so they let her sleep in their bed. And she was getting older. She was 11, 12 years old, and she really wasn't gaining the independence and the self-reliance that comes with sleeping in your own bed, having your own room, feeling in charge of yourself. So the parents decided that they really had to address the problem, and they had to address it quickly because she was really getting older, and it was at a step. In fact, she wasn't going to sleepovers because she was afraid to, because she was so used to sleeping with her parents. So socially, it was affecting her as well. So the first thing they did was step back, which is non-judgmentally pausing and thinking about the situation, which I've really just explained, and they decided that they had to self-reflect about first, the second step, self-reflecting, thinking about how they felt about the problem. And they realized that secretly they were kind of annoyed, that they were frustrated, they weren't getting time alone together at night themselves, it was causing a marital problem, and yet they didn't want to disappoint their child because they felt guilty for being so busy. So they told her that they were going to sit and talk about it and find a way to solve the problem. So the third step is understanding your child's mind, which is really the crux of the problem. And the little girl said that she honestly missed her mommy and daddy, and she wanted to be with them at night. And so she would get out of her bed and crawl into bed with them, and she felt safe and secure, and that's why she wanted to do it. And so her parents were a little taken aback, not realizing she didn't feel safe and secure, but all that time away from them made it hard. So they understood now what the meaning was behind the behavior of sleeping in the parents' bed, and they had to look at her stage of development, which they really were off course with, because you should be able to sleep in your own bed by 3, 4, 5 at least. And so they decided they would problem solve. And she was going to a new school, and it was summertime. So they decided that they would give her the summer to slowly start a transition to sleeping in her own bed. And they gave her things that you might give a younger child, like stuffed animals to sleep with and a nightlight. And she had to kind of practice. So she didn't immediately just sleep in her own bed. She still would go in their bed, but this time they would walk her. It was tiring because they were working all day, but they had to go through this period of time where they walked her back to her bed and sat by her bedside a little bit until she fell asleep, which was very quick because she was exhausted. And so by the time the 2 months of summer were over, she was ready to go to school and sleep on her own. And, you know, the little girl was really happy at the end because she said she felt so much more comfortable and more on her own, sleeping in her own bed. And she started to go to sleepovers and join with the other kids more. So it really worked very effectively.
And the key here is, again, as I mentioned earlier, the key to this five-step program that you have developed is that it helps parents become reflective rather than reactive.
Yes, very well put.
And this is what we really need to do as parents. We reflect during the day. That is when we are with our coworkers. If someone annoys us, we don't snap immediately. We take a step back. We try to be reflective. And sometimes with our children, when we're home, we lose that ability or we forget it.
Yeah, and we jump in too fast.
Exactly. We react. And rather than try to cope with this wonderful five-step process, I think is excellent. And I'm going to review that. Number one is stepping back and reviewing and then seeing how we feel about it, self-reflection. And then third, try to understand what is going on in your child's mind. And fourth, understanding your child's development. Where are they? Are they in school? Are they in elementary school? Are they in high school? Where are they? And then helping them to problem solve, to come up with a solution that is good for both parent and child.
Exactly.
And also,
what it does is it secures the bond between the parents and the child. The child learns that they can come to their parents with problems, and the parents know that they're actually teaching kids critical skills of problem solving in the process. So it really works very well.
It really does. And I think there are two excellent books, and I want to repeat the titles. One is Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anxiety in Children and Teens, and the other is A Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anger in Children and Teens. Let's talk about managing anger a little bit. That gets to be a little hard. Sometimes as parents, we're put off when our child throws a tantrum and we just don't know what to do about it because it comes in the middle of maybe a family event. Can you give us an example of parents who are dealing with anger in their children?
Sure. Again, very important is to step back. Never yell at a yelling child. It only escalates and makes everybody turn into a big mess and a hullabaloo. Better to step back, be calm. Your calm actually helps the child calm down. She sees that you're not afraid of her anger, which is very, very important, and that you're there to help her.
And we're not reacting.
Yes.
In other words,
phrase reflective, not reactive. It's very good. It's really on point.
And
so self-reflecting, the parent might think that they're annoyed that their child is angry because they're busy and they don't know if they have time to deal with it. But they're best off calming their own anger and their own anxiety and their own annoyance so that they can help deal with their child's anger. And then the third step is understanding your child's mind. What are they angry about? What's going on? Now, a child might come home from school and maybe somebody on the bus called them stupid or something like that. And that erases in their mind all the praise they got all day from their teacher. And so the parent says, tell me about your anger. You ask open-ended questions, not direct questions. Tell me what's making you so upset today. I really want to know. And so, again, non-blamefully, you're non-judgmentally inviting the child to talk about what's anger and making them angry. And the idea is that they're talking about it now. They're not screaming about it. So you've already taken a big leap. And the child says, I was on the bus, and Ward called me a stupid kid, and I'm really mad at him, and I want to get back at him, and I don't know what to do about it. And the mother says, instead of getting back at him, let's think about why this bothers you so much. Just because he calls you stupid doesn't make you stupid, make you believe that you're stupid. And so I often tell parents, if you know, your friend calls you a porcupine, does that mean you're prickly? And the kid laughs and says, no, I'm not a porcupine, I'm a little boy. And you say, well, just because someone says something doesn't mean it's true. And so that is like an awakening to a child. They believe that when another child calls them a name, they are that. They have become that. And so it's very helpful for the parent to understand the child's mind and let them know that that doesn't make it true and that they forgot all the good things that happened during the day. So you understand your child's development, you realize that that's typical of kids to take very seriously what other kids say to them, and that you can help their development by letting them think for themselves and know really how they are. And so to problem solve, which is the fifth step, the mother and the child talked about, well, the next time you meet this kid, Ward, what are you going to do if he calls you stupid? Now the child had more energy and more confidence, and he said, I'm going to tell him I'm not stupid, that he's stupid for calling me that name. Now, it's a little silly, but it actually gives the kid some autonomy and some power over the situation he felt helpless in, and he needn't be angry anymore.
That was a good word, power. That this five-step program that you've developed really helps empower the child as
yes.
well as the parent.
And they're doing it together. It's a collaborative process. It's not an antagonistic process, which is very important. And it strengthens the child's bond with the parent for the future.
And very often it is a guide to keeping us calm. Very often we want to react and say, what are you carrying on about? I want to make dinner. Why are you choosing now? We're reactive rather than being calm and being there to solve the problem with our child.
It also helps the parents, especially busy parents who've been working all day, to readjust their priorities. So they call out for pizza instead of make a big dinner. Better they had a good long conversation with their kids.
I want to thank you, Dr. Lori Holman, for helping us to understand that by incorporating five steps, we might manage and help our children and adolescents find ways to quickly and effectively approach their children's anxiety and anger. And the five steps are stepping back, reflecting, understanding your child's mind, understanding your child's development, and together finding a way to problem solve. Thank you, Dr. Lori Holman, author of Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anxiety and Busy Parents' Guide to Managing Anger in Your Children's and Teens. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.